What up, son? Word.
It just seems like my career, man, it's been crazy. So many guys ducking, so many guys using PEDs, you know, bagging me back. I just want to prove that I am the best. You know I'm the best. I just want to prove that I am the best. Me versus A Juice and Jay. Listen, mate. I declare war upon you. Do you accept my challenge? Are you still gonna squat while as you piss? I've been waiting for a long time, baby. I know I'm the champion. I know I'm the best. Is you up for the test? But the world wants Joshua.
All right, well,
I want Joshua. Joshua, come and see me, baby.
Well,
no more hiding. No more ducking. No more dodging. No more excuses. Let's make the fight happen. Let's see who's the best. I know I'm the best. Are you up for the test?
We are back. And this week, exclusively, I've got for you guys the Shook One himself, Anthony Joshua, on the line with me. AJ, tell us all why you won't take the Wilder fight.
Well, first of all, got to thank my man Eddie Hearn doing it big in the UK. Stop booing him.
Stay big him humble. Up, big him up.
Big him up, you know. So we just done the Takam fight, and then now we got the WBA mandatory, got the IBO mandatory, we got every mandatory, got Tyson Fury, who's now 350 pounds. So we're going to make that fight.
It might be more.
100,000, Wembley, AJ boxing, stay humble.
Okay, so let's talk about the Deontay Wilder and Burmese Duvernay fight. And for those of you listening and subscribing, thank you for doing that. Leave a rating, a review, et cetera, et cetera. Let's get into the boxing, okay? Or we could talk about the great UFC card last night. I don't know. AJ?
I'd rather talk about the UFC.
Yeah, because you don't want to talk about Deontay Wilder. You're ducking him. You're avoiding him. Wilder says he's the world champion. He will go anywhere to fight. And he proved it by saying he would go to Russia, and he, you know, was in Russia, or at least on his way to Russia, when he found out he needs to turn around and come right back home, because Alexander Povetkin pissed clean, or actually didn't, pissed hot. And what do you think about Deontay Wilder, first of all, accusing Anthony Joshua on live TV of juicing?
Hey, Juice J. Okay, can I stop being Anthony Joshua now?
I mean, can you? Nobody's going to believe that it's not AJ.
Stay humble.
I mean, they're waiting for you to offer them. Never mind. Never mind. Go on. You could talk about Burmese Duvernay basically showing up to get knocked out, right?
Man, he came in 254 pounds, had fat, like...
Joshua doesn't think that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, clearly not. Until he reaches the sixth round. But Joshua doesn't have fat that goes over his trunks.
Okay.
And he just looked a mess.
Stavern.
And he'll just Stavern just looked a mess, so you could just tell which direction this was heading in. And then once the fight took place and he threw like, what was it, two punches? Like, I saw him throw like two jabs.
And I mean, then, you might be giving him more credit than he deserves, or actually, you know, miscounting. But it was around that number. It was a good ballpark.
Yeah, because I was looking at what he was doing, especially because it would be so predictable of boxing for him to just turn up in that shape, swing like one right hand and not quite that out clean. But
if only it was that easy.
If only it was that easy. Wilder lands his jab well. Yeah, his jab, which was okay, but I didn't give too much like credit into it because of how bad the burn was. But then the jab right hand, and then the rest was pretty much history. A couple more knockdowns. And McCanty's pulling him off, the poor guy.
I mean, I don't know that McCanty was pulling him off so much as that Wilder was taking McCanty for a ride. Such an iconic image last night, though. As non-competitive as the fight was, and it completely wasn't, Stavern, you could say, just showed up to get knocked out. That image of Stiverne crumpled on the ground with his eyes closed, sleeping. Mercanti with hanging off of Wilder's back. Wilder with his back to Stiverne. I mean, such a great image. So now, in the aftermath of this fight, and I do want to say that the 1-2 that initially dropped Stiverne was a really nice shot. Like I'll give him
credit for that.
Talk about windmill all you want, but that wasn't windmilling whatsoever. That was just a beautiful straight shot.
Well, the straight shot is good, but it's everything that follows afterwards for Wilder, which is the windmill, which he can't be doing anymore.
Okay, but what about this? Does Wilder windmill when he doesn't have a guy hurt? I don't think he does it. Like, I think he gets that a little too much. He usually does that when he's finishing, when he sees red. Now, in his eyes, and I trust that Wilder's smart enough to know that he can only do that at certain points, and he does.
Mm-hmm.
When he has the opening for it, and he doesn't do that when a guy isn't hurt, because obviously you can easily get countered and put away if you get reckless, like someone like Oscar Valdez. So, do you think maybe that Wilder gets a little too much criticism for the windmills when really everything before that was basically your typical boxing? I mean, you could fault him for dropping his right hand when he was throwing the jab, but he's throwing it from so far away. Like, you know, who could actually counter that?
Well, it's a bit difficult because my stance on Wilder is that, yes, he has the power and whatnot, but he just does pretty much everything that you're not supposed to in a boxing ring. From the drop in the right hand, and then from retreating back in straight lines, from leaving his chin in the air, and he's just all over the place.
You mean he fights like a UFC fighter?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
He fights, yeah. I'm pretty sure he was in karate stunts for some of that first round as well. He's like, I thought he was gonna throw a wheel kick for a second. The way he just scuttled up to the left when Stiverne tried to like do what he tried to do.
Right, there aren't words to describe what that was.
There are no words to describe what his performance was. But I guess I saw some sort of a theory as to how Wilder can continue to be effective with that irregular fighting style, because if you look at someone like Prince Nassim Hamed back in the day, he did everything irregular from the angles he threw punches from and the way he gained leverage and whatnot and his footwork. He was all irregular. So in an odd, like less athletic and less skilled manner, Wilder could be that Prince Nassim of this era of awful heavyweights. So it could work in his favour. Let me ask you this. In terms of now Stiverne's vanquished and done with, where do you put him on in the list of the best boxing internet memes after that finish?
Oh, right now he's number one. There was another one earlier in the day that I forgot about. Like, Stiverne has launched to the top of internet memes.
Is he higher than Pacquiao Marquez 4?
No. Or well, that's in the Hall of Fame right now. But right now, this is the hottest, the freshest, this the dankest, the best, whatever you want to call it. Like, this is the best right now.
He's probably number one this year, without a doubt. After probably second will be AJ landing that uppercut, which...
I mean, that one is a cool picture, but it just doesn't beat, like, the freaking scene of Stiverne on the floor. You got the referee in the air. You got people shocked in the crowd. You got Wilder, you know, turned around. The fight was just ridiculous on that level. I thought you were going to ask me, like, where does Stiverne rank in boxing now? I was going to say, well...
I can ask you that as well.
I mean, it would take me like 5 minutes to list all the guys ahead of him, probably longer.
Because Stiverne's pretty much... I don't consider him a boxer. I didn't consider him one before the fight. He's pretty much an internet meme. I think I posted on Reddit like the week before, like the last fight he had was with Jarrell Miller in the heavyweight factory in Florida where Shannon Briggs trains. That's probably the last I've ever seen of him. And he just looked depressed. He looked all over the place. His braids weren't even tightened properly. That's how you know he's in trouble. So
when his hair wasn't did?
Yeah, when his hair wasn't did. And yeah. So God bless the WBC for making him, for putting us through that.
Well, the WBC had an interesting week. Not only did they somehow sanction this fight, they also came out and said, and this one blows my mind. We're going to talk about it later, but since we're talking about the WBC, somehow Luis Neri was allowed. He's going to keep his title. And the WBC said basically, they're not going to test the B. They're not going to do the B test. And they also said, well, we don't know if he took the substance to enhance his performance. So technically, it wasn't a PED because we don't know what the intent is, which is bizarre. But story for another day. Wilder wants Joshua. Joshua wants Fury. Parker maybe wants Joshua. What's going to happen next year? Like, who does Wilder fight next? Who does Joshua fight next? Who does Parker fight next?
Well, Parker just wants money. So I suspect that he will fall into place somewhere. So if you look at it this way, so Parker's seen as the less risk, less market valued heavyweight out of the three. So he'll have to be dictated to by whoever throws him a bone and gives him a payday. That may be Joshua.
I think possibly if Jarrell Miller wins, I think it's Jarrell Miller on HBO. But that's just me. I don't think it's a good chance.
There's rumors of Lucas Brown. There's rumors of Brian Jennings because he's still because Aram had that kind of like relationship with his promotional team.
Well, I think he has an American option on Parker.
Yeah. Because Parker basically can't have any fights back home because the government can't fund the fights anymore. So he's in that limbo. So he's probably going to have to base himself in the UK or in the US and work that way. Now, the interesting one is to do with Wilder and Joshua, because you have a situation here where Wilder clearly wants to fight, and he's been directed, all roads lead to that fight as being like the best conceivable matchup in the division.
What about in the whole sport?
You'd be hard pressed to find many more significant matchups. It's probably the most significant matchup, but obviously, in terms of skill level, I'd rank a lot more higher. But it doesn't carry like the same clout that the heavyweight division does.
I agree.
But because Joshua and Eddie Hearn are now likely to play A-side tactics and whatnot, I'm less than optimistic that fight happens at all next year, really, the way it's picturing out. Because you see them trying to incentivize the likes of Tyson Fury to get back in. And that fight may happen, and that's obviously a bigger fight than the Wilder fight at this stage.
In the UK.
Yeah, it's the biggest fight in British boxing history, so that's quite significant. And you can have that fight, and everything works into the favour of AJ, and then have the Wilder fight afterwards. Then it's coming up roses for that side of the pond. So I think whilst all theories of Joshua and people and them being scared of Wilder, I think those are untrue. But there's an element of them trying to play like nice little A-side tactics. And isn't it funny? Because if the boot was on the other leg and the Americans were going on about how we have these options and we can make money this way, or we can make money in this fight, or we can bring this guy to retirement, a lot of media members and whatnot will be going nuts right now saying, typical American, self-entitled and whatnot.
Well, and the American journalists would be all over that.
Exactly. But now, because Eddie Hearn's the new chip on the block and has his new fight card coming up, and he gives most of these people the time of day, then they'll be more willing to say, okay, yeah, they can play A-side for a little bit and do what they need to do. And Wilder will have to make concessions, travel to the UK, which he already accepted he has. I haven't seen any signal from Wilder saying that he's going to be difficult in negotiations. The only example that people have given to me is the fact that he's asking for X amount of money to fight Dillian White, which I don't particularly care about, as you probably already know.
Well, I'd want a ton of money to fight Dillian White too, only because it's a big waste of my time.
Exactly.
What does Dillian White do? Like, Dillian White, and I'm sorry, UK fans, and we'll get onto the subject of UK fans in a bit, but I think Dillian White is just not worth the time. He's not good. And you're delusional if you think Dillian White is anything more than a guy with as much skill as Charles Martin or Dominic Brazil. Like, I don't even know if he's at that level.
At best, he's a step sideways. But now he's just being wheeled in as a convenience. Like, last weekend should have dispelled any notion of any fan wanted to see Wilder White. Yet you still have people on Twitter saying, oh, why? I still think Dillian White can handle Wilder. Why doesn't Wilder take the payday? Why do you care if he takes the payday or not? It doesn't make any sense.
Is it a good fight? You know, that's the first thing you should ask. And the question and the answer to that is no.
It sucks. It's really not a good fight at all. And this is nothing against Dillian White as a person, because I think he's just a likable run-of-the-mill guy. And I actually kind of feel sorry for him, because he's basically been wheeled out.
Because he almost lost to Chisora?
Almost lost to Chisora, and then stomped the place out last weekend against Hellenius in a fight that he shouldn't really be being in, because if he couldn't anticipate that Hellenius was going to fight the way he would, then I don't know what to say. Eddie Hearn's probably not a very good matchmaker then. And he's not even, this is the interesting thing, he's not even signed to match in sport or with Eddie Hearn. They basically work on a fight-by-fight basis, because they can somehow both use each other. White wants the title fights and he wants the ultimately Joshua rematch. And then Hearn can wheel him up in a situation like this, like put him in front of Parker, put him in front of Wilder, sell a couple hundred thousand pay-per-views in the UK and make a bit of money before they get to AJ. But the fact that so many UK fans acknowledge this but still advocate for the fight to happen and still buy into the Hearn like speech and the Hearn way of thinking, there's just something that gets really frustrating every time you see it brought up, like, oh, fight Dillian White. Like, why? You're a fan. You should not want to see that fight happen at all.
Well, UK fans, would you agree, have been essentially brainwashed by the matchroom machine?
Yeah, ultimately. You're only as good as your broadcaster. When you have a broadcaster advocating for certain fights to happen, and then you have a broadcaster who has paid company men who will write articles to the effect saying that this should happen and this guy needs to fight this guy and our guy is the best in the division, or this guy hits harder than this guy on a daily basis, then it's always going to brainwash people don't know any better or who don't care to know any better, because if they're just...
For the Americans, compare Top Rank 2 years ago and compare Golden Boy prior to them leaving to Showtime, and then look at Showtime after they... I mean, Showtime after... Or not Showtime, but Golden Boy after they left to Showtime, and then look at Top Rank now. Like, they're not getting the kind of opinions out of boxing fans that they were before. I mean, there's still some because there's a lot of leftover residue, but now without the HBO broadcast behind them, and HBO really is the best at this, it's exactly right when you say you have to have the broadcast to basically hype up your fighters and to have the fans believe a certain thing.
Yeah, that's it. Eddie Hearn's always said, and this is something I give him credit for, that as a promoter, you're only as good as your broadcaster. And he's had the exclusive Sky deal for about 5-6 years now going on. And it's worked wonders for him. And it's opened up opportunity that he may not have envisioned when he went full-time into the sport, like going on to the American card that's happening next weekend. But it works against fans who know better, like myself, who constantly have to read this nonsense like on a daily basis. It gets really frustrating. And at the same time, we don't want to be snobbery about it, because you can't really dictate what people find fun or not, but there's certain things like this that you're thinking, how can people be constantly thinking this way? And then it points back to the machine that's behind them.
Let me ask you this question. So Danny Jacobs fights on Saturday, and on the undercard is Jarrell Miller. Do you think possibly, and this is Matchroom's first American card, do you think that with Miller on the undercard, that this is a potential option for Joshua at some point in 2018?
Definitely. Because as Eddie Hearn's laid out like a future plan, and it involves three fights in 2018, and one of those fights will be abroad. They're talking about all the new markets and whatnot, like Saudi Arabia, and the usual like crap ones that promoters like to pull out to say that, oh, we have this international reach. But I think most likely he's going to be in America, and in order to hit the ground running, they're more than likely going to want to face an American opponent. And if that's not Wilder, then Jarrell Miller is not a bad way to go in that aspect.
Yeah, because he can sell a fight.
He can sell a fight. He can talk.
And he with the the HBO, well, I mean, Miller's last fight, I believe, was on Showtime, and then now he's going to be on HBO. He's going to get a good amount of exposure in 2017 to set himself up for a Joshua fight. And record-wise, you could say he's earned it. And we'll talk more about Miller a little bit later when we preview his fight, but I just don't think he's that good. But, yeah, what about Wilder for next year?
Well, in the post-fight presser, they were mentioning Dominic Brazil, which, if the AJ fight is not a possibility, I wouldn't be massively against it at this stage. I think Brazil's had a solid enough year, 2 knockout wins, and
he lasted a while against AJ too.
Yeah, exactly. Take away the left hook that Dillian White threw against AJ, and look at, is there any real difference between his performance against AJ and Dominic Brazil's? Yeah, Brazil's just another outcasted American, brash guy who talked a lot and then got beat up. And then Dillian White is apparently a future world champion and a viable contender. That's kind of like the thing we're dealing with here. So I actually think I'd much rather see a Wilder Brazil fight than the Wilder White fight, in personal opinion. But people may disagree for whatever reasons.
I think a Wilder Brazil fight is a much shorter fight than the Joshua Brazil fight, and the reason why is I think Wilder's a lot faster than AJ.
Brazil's a very slow starter, so if he's lethargic in those first couple of rounds, then it could be earlier quite quick.
But I mean,
if he braves that early storm, then it could get interesting.
Well, for a dude that is slow as Brazil, and then on top of that being a slow starter, like, I think Wilder's going to light him up. Should they fight? I think that's probably
what should happen, but there's always the possibility that he breaks his hand on Brazil's big ass head, and we're in another tricky situation with Wilder, where he doesn't look as good as advertised.
what do you think about the potential that we can actually see Tyson Fury fight Anthony Joshua?
Fury's sounding more and more encouraging in terms of interviews and whatnot, and there seems to be traction on the drug hearing case they're looking at towards the end of this year or early next year in terms of figuring that out. So I feel like, first of all, we may begin to see Tyson Fury in some shape or form in the ring. But as it relates to the Joshua fight, it all depends on the involved parties, because if those behind Tyson right now are looking at him and seeing, okay, he needs to get this weight down, he won't be fully ready until April, are they going to want to buy their time, have a couple fights beforehand, or is Ahern going to be too enticing and try and like tempt him and probe him into an AJ fight, knowing that it'll work it into him and AJ's favour better, and it can still be built into what it is, which is the biggest fight in British boxing history. So it's an interesting one. So, if gone to my head, I'd probably say it happens 2019, if anything. Yeah, that's if that, the right things happen. But if
that's how long it'll take, though, for Fury to be anything close to a shape that he can fight in, and I think
but money talks, and if everything gets accelerated and the right things get said and enough people get convinced, then it could happen sooner. But as it stands, it should be. That's a realistic target for when that fight should be happening. And that's why I say that Joshua Wilder is the best available fight at the moment in the division.
I mean, I just don't see Fury ever being in a good fighting shape. It's like, that's a lot of weight. I mean, the dude is huge.
Well, he's done it before. Well, he's done it before several times. I think the most recent time is when he was scheduled to fight David Haye all those years ago, back September 2013.
And then when David Haye was going to beat him.
Yeah, when David Haye was going to knock him out. That's what, like, everyone thought. When the life and deaths with Steve Cunningham, loudmouth, brass Tyson Fury, who no one thought was anything close to a world-level operator and only won fights because he was big.
I mean, you must be talking about the UK fans.
No, I did too, to an extent. But I had to go off by what I saw. So in that period, he went off the rails and then blew up to like the kind of weight that he is now.
I think you could say he was on the rails.
Yeah, that too. And then it took him a good, was it, between that stage, 2014, and then when he fought Klitschko, that's a good 18 months.
Yeah, that was a long time.
A couple tune-up fights, beating up Chisora again, and then getting a mandatory space again, and then being around 247 or what it was, in excellent shape for the Klitschko fight, and doing it again. So we're talking about that kind of time frame again, but with the added caveat is that he's now 29 years old and has now done further damage to his body from being out of the ring for so long and abusing it the way he has. So it's quite unlikely that we've ever seen him in that kind of shape or form.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, you know, having to lose all that weight again. Like, at some point, that catches up with you. And doing a bunch of coke does, too.
Yeah, basically the Ricky Hatton way.
Exactly.
Like Hatton's lifestyle on top of his fight style, which doesn't age well as it is, that all caught up with him. And I feel like similar will probably happen to Fury. All right, but ultimately, there's a lot of bridges to cross before we even get to our stage. So at this moment, Fury isn't inactive. So that's what it is.
So to sum this up, I think Wilder's going to fight Brazil next. I think Joshua is going to fight Miller next. And I think Parker is going to do something. I don't know. Maybe he'll rematch Andy Ruiz. I mean, I would actually like to see Andy Ruiz fight Tyson Fury right now. Like, they don't get to lose any weight.
That ring would break Brock Lesnar Big Show style.
All right, Sean Porter fought Adrian Granados. He beat him in a 12-round decision. Sean Porter lost the last few rounds, and not because Granados came on strong or that Porter gassed or anything, but because he broke his hand, and you can see in that, like, it was game-changing when he broke his hand. Like, he immediately grimaced. He immediately dropped his hand and basically just tried to survive.
You mean his fight became immediately watchable again?
Are you kidding me?
I don't know about you, but I just can't sit through a Sean Porter fight. Probably the only one was the Thurman fight, and even that wasn't as good as people made it out to be, in my opinion. I just can't sit through one of his fights, man. His style is awful.
Okay.
He's really not my top. And it was the same again yesterday. Like, Granados is a 140-pounder, and Porter's probably one of the biggest welterweights out there. And
dude, he's like five foot four. Are you serious?
Like, in terms of, like, muscle mass and all that stuff.
Yeah, like, he's got so much muscle mass because he's so short. He can afford to add muscle.
Yeah, he just rampages and does his thing. But it's not pleasant to watch at all.
I mean, I'm not disputing that at all. I can totally get if you're not a fan of Sean Porter's style. He mauls, he smothers. It's just not clean, you know? There's such a world of difference, but watching Sean Porter's offense, and then you think of somebody who can fight in the pocket like Floyd and just pick a guy apart, like, man, it's just worlds apart. And both are effective, no doubt. Sean Porter's effective at what he does.
What's also interesting about Sean is that him and his dad have even admitted that they're going to have to readapt their style, because that kind of rampaging offense is gonna limit their career pretty much, and he's even felt the effects, like, from the Berto fight. Even though he won convincingly, he was busted up on all sorts. So that's something that they're looking into. But I didn't see any evidence of that on Saturday night.
No, and you know, as he gets older and loses athleticism, he is a sitting duck. But I wanted to ask you this question: do you think Granados had any business claiming to the live audience on the microphone that he won the fight?
No, but it's funny nonetheless.
It was absolutely funny, but, like, really?
You feel sorry for the guy. Like most of his losses prior to that were close decision ones.
I thought that was going to be the meme of the night.
It's like kind of like when he goes on about, oh, his politics does me wrong. Like, to an extent, he's true, but yesterday he just lost clearly. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, like, it's nobody did you wrong last night. You got beat, and you got beat pretty convincingly.
And even against Broner, I thought Broner won that clearly. I just think people made more of a deal about it because it's okay. It's easy to hate on someone like Broner, but yeah. I mean, he did enough of that fight too.
I thought Broner won as well.
But, yeah, so he didn't really have many qualms, but I'd much rather see an Adrian Granados fight than a Sean Porter fight. Let's leave it at that. So there is a future for him in this sport, even though his record is patchy and has 6 losses on it. I still feel like there's a place for him on TV.
Granados is like best case scenario Mauricio Herrera. Like Herrera had a lot of iffy losses, and at one point in his career, you could argue that he'd only suffered one real actual loss where he just got beat, and that was the Mike Alvarado fight very early in his career. But every other fight, even in the Danny Garcia fight, you could say he had an argument for claiming he won the fight.
He had an argument. You mean he definitely beat Danny Garcia? Yeah,
I actually didn't say that, because I actually don't hate American fighters or the Heyman fighters or anything like that. Like, I like everybody.
yeah, sure you do.
Who don't I like?
Manny Pacquiao.
I don't dislike Manny Pacquiao. I just dislike his fans.
Oh, so with me and AJ?
No, you and British fans and a certain contingency of the boxing community that I'm not going to say, but if you've ever talked to, if you know, people who know you know what I'm talking about. I don't want to out you.
Well, ultimately, Herrera beat Garcia and he beat Benavidez. And
okay, I'll give you Benavidez. Benavidez was more of a robbery than the Garcia fight, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess so.
Because at least in the Garcia fight, and if you claim that Herrera won that fight, you can't deny that at least Garcia was standing and trying to box. He wasn't just laying on the ropes and letting himself get hit like Benavidez did.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but anyway, this is like, Granados is the best case scenario, or because yeah, he's actually exciting to fight or to watch, whereas Herrera is just horrific.
And I think if he goes down to 140 with the division as it is, then he could give a lot of people stuff to think about when they're coming up and trying to work their way into like easy title shots and whatnot. So there could be opportunities there.
Okay, so let's put that on pause, because we're gonna come right back to Granados. So Sergey Lipinets fought, and before the fight, Sergey Lipinets was seen as one of the more underrated fighters. Like if you looked at the fighters who nobody really knows about but are on the without a world title, you'd probably rate Lipinets in the top 10. You know, he's got a great amateur background. He's very quickly approaching a world title fight. This was, you know, what, his 11th fight or 12th fight or something. He's in a world title fight. And prior to that, had looked extremely capable and strong in the ring. And do you think that the mystique around him is kind of gone, and that maybe he's lost a lot of the luster and a lot of the hype that he got prior to this fight?
Well, in a way, he probably would have, because of the nature of the fight. But again, you have to kind of think of it logically, knowing the kind that his opponent just over. He was underestimated in a general sense, and it was meant to be like a quick, like vacant title blow over and move on to the next one. But his opponent came to fight. Lipinets, I thought, started well. I thought I kind of liked his defensive work to begin with, and then he got drugged into a brawl a bit and got tagged a couple times. I remember one time in particular where he got tagged and really felt it quite badly. But so it was just a natural learning curve. So in the short term, I guess, yes, to answer your question, the loss would have gone on, but in the long term, once that could all be forgotten if he moves on to the next one and deals with his first stiff challenge after that in a good fashion. So it's one of those ones where you win first, look good later kind of situation.
I think he was definitely kind of, I hate to say this, you know, I don't mean exposed the way most people say exposed, or what they mean when they say it, at least. What I mean is, I think we've discovered some of the weaknesses he's got. And Kondo did something really interesting that changed the course of the fight, in my opinion, is that he basically just started to manage the distance. He wasn't standing in range for Lipinets to land that jab. And Lipinets is really quick. Like, most Russian fighters aren't that fast. But Lipinets is really quick.
That's all I noticed initially. Like, this guy had decent hand speed. So yeah. And that was, like, the first, like, I mean, yeah.
He's got good defense and everything, but like it's good.
But the defense,
but it's not put together yet.
Yeah, the defense kind of went in like after the first opening, like the first 4 rounds. Yeah, the defense was on point, but after that, I thought it started to dissipate a little bit, and he started to unravel at times.
He kind of looks, or I mean, Sergio Martinez is one of the best at this, and obviously like a Floyd Mayweather or something, but they're guys who can transition between offense and defense seamlessly. And Lipinitz is one or the other. Like, he's very basic in that regard. Both are good. His offense is good, defense is good, but it's one or the other.
Do you think that's something that he could acquire once he gets more experience? Because we're talking about a guy who only has about 13. Was it that's his 13th pro fight?
I think. I can't remember. I think he can. And with Buddy McGirt as a trainer, I think that's the right guy to kind of ease him into that. But I don't think it'll ever come natural to him like the, you know, Sergio Martinez. It's just,
yeah. I guess, yeah, on that level, it has to come natural to you. But that's something that could work on.
But so now, talking about Lipinitz, do you see him, first of all, do you see him beating any of the top guys at 140? I think no. And
who
the
are we
reason
considering,
why?
Who are we considering the top
guys? Exactly.
Yeah.
There aren't any top guys.
Unless you, like, someone said, I think someone asked on Twitter, who's the best guy at 140? But that, so now Crawford's left. You have to say by default is Mikey Garcia because his last fight was at 140.
Right. And if it's Mikey Garcia, Lipinitz ain't beating him.
Exactly. So, and you know, Garcia is probably going down to 35. So once you now, you have one bacon belt filled and then a lot of young contenders looking for the other bacon belts.
I don't see Lipinitz beating Garcia and Ndongo. I don't know.
That would be a weird kind of fight. That'd be a tough one because of Ndongo's length and reach.
And both guys are going to want to jab a lot. I that's a fight that I cannot see. That could very well be like a first round knockout, or it could be a 12 round, very boring, awkward fight.
Yeah, I think more of the latter in that sense.
But there's also a guy that we were just talking about, Adrian Granados. How do you think Granados would do against Lipinitz?
I think it's given something to think about, especially early on. But I think Lipinitz would land the more eye-catching shots and start to pick his way to a decisive victory. It gave Lipinitz another gut check, but I think yesterday counted as a gut check. So he would have learned from that and built from it.
I think that a fight with Granados kind of goes the way the Kondo fight went. I think it's pretty much the same type of fight.
Added to Granados complaining about this decision afterwards, but you know.
Except Kondo or Granados would claim in the post-fight interview that he won the fight.
Yeah. Politics, man.
Okay, let's talk about the HBO / Sky card. Although that card was on Sky as well.
So you guys basically got 3 minutes of HBO broadcast.
Yeah, actually, it was literally like 3 minutes. So, which is longer than you can say for yourself. But Dimitri Bivol fought Trent Broadhurst of Australia. So that's red flag number one in Monaco. Red flag number two in the afternoon. Red flag number three in his like 11th fight. So that's four red flags on your broadcast, okay? So Dimitri Bivol has fought once before, and they gushed over him because he fought a guy who he was supposed to knock out, and I believe he did. Can't even remember.
Cedric Agnew.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Kovalev Ward undercard.
Yeah, I know it was a Kovalev Ward undercard because I remember somebody quitting in that fight or in that card. But yeah, so...
Okay. I remember a couple of low blows being thrown, but we'll leave it at that.
The only low blows that got thrown were coming from me. So, Roy Jones was gushing about Bivol in this fight. Well, the HBO, they did what they do, okay? Lampley was wrong about what he saw.
They got their 3 minutes of worth of gushing in.
Oh, actually, did you watch it? Because
I heard that Max got interrupted mid sentence because obviously I was on the Sky broadcast the whole night, but I heard that Max got interrupted mid sentence and he wasn't happy.
Lampley actually was the one who was talking about, or he was trying to assert to us that Bivol made Broadhurst drop the left hand so that he can hit him with the right. And Roy Jones, like, painstakingly told him, no, that's not what happened. And then showed the replay.
I think I heard that sort of news. It's like, he didn't pull away the jab. It was just a straight.
Yeah, and he walked him through basically how Bivol turned his glove so that it could fit through the guard, because he's actually a genius and can see, or he does stuff in slow motion, and land clean on Broadhurst's chin. But this is the second time that Broadhurst had gone down. Broadhurst basically, after he got hit the first time by Bivol, did what normally guys who are outmatched do. He basically stopped throwing punches. Okay, so should you be impressed that Bivol knocked him out? Not really. And the other thing is, this is a domestic Australian fighter. Like, should we give Errol Spence credit because he beats up Jeff Horn? No.
The Hornets world level, though, so incomparable.
Okay. Well, did we give Kovalev credit for beating Blake Caparello?
Didn't he get dropped in that fight?
Oh, yeah, he did, huh? Did we give Anthony Durrell credit, or was it Andre, credit for beating Blake Caparello? No. You know why? Because Australian domestic fighters typically, and it's not by any fault of their own, they just don't have the skill that, you know, they don't have the domestic scene to build up their skill like we do. And I just want to know, is Seattle's offensive line ever going to protect Russell Wilson? I mean, I've seen this guy run like 8 plays straight. Anyway, so do you think Bivol is to be taken seriously as one of the top guys at light heavyweight?
Definitely. From just the eye test alone, you'd have to say so. But now it's time to really step it up. And so, you can just tell when a fighter has that kind of demeanor, where they're confident and assured in everything they do. And that's something that really came across from Bivol on Saturday. He kind of looks like one of those perfectionist kind of fighters where he practices every like different move in the gym.
If we're to operate under the assumption that Adonis Stevenson is pound for pound number one, where does Bivol rate? This is a joke. So if you don't know what we're talking about, this is a joke from the chat room that we're not even going to pay any more attention to. So good performance by Bivol, but whenever you knock a guy out in the first round, and especially if they're of the level of Broadhurst, like, you don't learn anything. There's nothing to be gained from this fight. Like, okay, Bivol punches hard, but he punches hard against a guy that probably will never be able to take a punch from a world level fighter. So let's move on.
Bingo.
Derek Chisora fought Agit Kabayel, which is like a made-up name. That's a real boxer. Is this finally the end of having to hear about Derek Chisora as some sort of heavyweight contender that deserves respect and title shots and all that stuff that the British public and fans and Eddie Hearn tells us about?
It's not the end of Derek Chisora in general, because he'll probably still get work as a sort of gatekeeper type and name recognition.
I thought what he was already.
But this is people actually realizing it properly for the first time.
Oh, okay.
Whereas everyone was like, oh yeah, if he just gets a nice couple decent fights here, then he can fight for a European title. And if he does that and he wins, then he'll fight for a world title eventually. And then now people are realizing, no, he's not going to get towards that level and shouldn't be considered in any discussion. I feel like we talk about Dillian White, both fighters were elevated in that way, even though as entertaining as their fight was, it was just a low-quality skill level. And it doesn't mask the fact that Derek has been on the slide for about several years now, since he fought Tyson Fury for the second time.
Well, I thought it was after the first time, but okay.
maybe after he fought David Haye, which is a year after the first Tyson Fury fight, so if we're being particular. So he's probably never been a saint since then. But he's been serviceable enough. He's a former European champion and all of that stuff, former world title challenger. But he's his own worst enemy in the fact that he's, even at his best, he was wildly inconsistent with his performances and was just a plodding type who'd come forward and sometimes not do much, and then never really had any knockout power to make the most of what he did do.
Is it worth taking Kabayel seriously?
I didn't really see enough to say he's like a viable world contender. He still looks like a bit novice to me. and still he looked a bit uncomfortable whenever Chisora did put any decent pressure in on him.
Okay. But,
so there are a couple of different working parts, but when you talk, if you're talking to like Americans and your audience, you won't really see or hear much with him because it'll probably be more a Europe, Europe based and more at the European level.
So let me, if you didn't watch this fight, I will explain it to you very easily in a way that you can understand, in a way that will have you get what this fight was, okay? So imagine, just for your, just for a second, remember Joseph Parker versus Huey Fury? I know you don't want to remember, but remember that fight? Now imagine if Huey Fury won, and imagine if the reason why he won was because Parker was actually just a little worse than he actually was, like he wasn't throwing punches and stuff. Now, imagine just a much boring, much more boring version of that fight. That's what this was.
Hard to disagree. And Caballero actually, in the lead up to Fury Parker, was in the Fury camp. And before the fight even took place, Peter Fury, Fury's trainer, his dad, was tweeting out how Chisora might struggle because he can't deal with anyone who moves. Hence how he lost convincingly to Tyson all these years ago.
Both times.
Lo and behold, yeah. Both times, and lo and behold, Kabayel employed a little bit of movement, even to the fact where he's basically running at times and still got the job done, because Chisora has never been good with that kind of style.
Okay.
Let alone when he shot.
I think we spent too much time on this fight already. We got to move on to Scott Quigg. Oh, wait, another fight that means nothing. I'm going to ask you, he fought Oleg Yefimovich, one of the reasons why I think he lost this fight, we're talking about Yefimovich, is his arms are really short. So, like, punches that should have been hitting Quigg clean were not hitting him. Russell Wilson on the run again. And then he throws an interception.
Oh, dear.
So, did Quigg look like he's improved under Freddie Roach? No. He has been training with Freddie Roach, if you didn't know. Did you just say no? Like, just blatantly flat out no? Who's improved more under Freddie Roach, Quigg or George St. Pierre?
George, obviously. Because Freddie was actually in his corner.
Oh, yeah. So just think about that. So Freddie chose an MMA fighter over
the legendary Scott Quigg. I think the best way to describe Quigg is that he's probably like one of the best fighters you'd like to train. Because he'd follow anything you do to instruction, like to a T. So, someone pointed out in his beginning, he had one trainer who taught him how to be patient taught him how to be reckless the same way he was last night, and then load up and be that way. And then when he moved to Joe Gallagher, training to, okay, not do anything for six rounds and then pounce on your opponent and work the body and all that stuff that Gallagher likes to do. And now with Roach, that it doesn't really seem to be much there. Just seems to be caught between different things. Erratic, more erratic than usual. Not using the jab and all that kind of stuff. And he doesn't really have the punch power they did at 122. Even though he got the stoppage yesterday.
I disagree that Quigg has had much punch power at 122, even because he's fighting domestic fighters. Like, you're supposed to stop those guys.
Yeah, I guess you could agree that. He was quite a big 122 pounder as well.
Do you think Quigg is like one of those guys that if you give him instructions, like, he's gonna follow them to the T, and like, you know, even if you use a figure of speech, he'll do it?
Yeah.
Like, if you're like, you know, if Quigg is like, man, this guy at the gym keeps teasing me because, you know, I don't have any, there's no black part of my eye, it's just all blue. And they're like, man, you need to give him a shit sandwich. Would he show up the next day with the like actual shit sandwich?
That's literally Scott Quigg. He's the boxing equivalent of a guinea pig.
And I've always actually kind of liked Scott Quigg a little bit. Like, I like making fun of him. I like all this stuff. But I've always kind of liked Scott Quigg because he is in good fights. It's not like he's a boring fighter. Except for the Frampton fight. Yeah. That was so, like, Gallagher deserved to have been fired for the game plan in that fight.
Yeah. But at least Gallagher actually turned up to some of his fights.
So?
Even though his presence wasn't often needed. But yeah, I guess Craig can make for good fights. Would he win them? Probably not. Like, I mean, I'm talking about at the top of the food chain here, 126. He can make for some good action. And what he and the interesting thing is here that he's still with Hearn, but most of the talent, the domestic talent at 126, is now on the other side of the pond with Warren. So they're trying to, at the end of the fight, they're thinking, oh, we're going to work around here, try and get this fighter and this fighter, but they're trying to like hide the fact that they may be frozen out of the picture in the short term. So even to get to that big fight is a bit of a struggle for Quigg. We'll have to see what happens.
Okay, again, another fighter. This is the problem when you bring on British people, is like they think they're seen as like super important.
So they run boxing. We run boxing
into the ground, maybe with these matchroom matchmaking.
Mismatchroom, mate.
And you know, it's funny because I like British boxing. I watch the domestic fights, and you hate it.
Yeah. Well, I don't hate it. It's just there's so much.
Well, what do you not like about British fans?
The impressionability and then this superiority complex, that because we have a couple stadium fights, which is all good and well, we have the biggest, one of the biggest stars in world boxing, it's great for the sport and whatnot. That doesn't mean that British boxing rules everything. If that's the case, why isn't Canelo Golovkin at Wembley Stadium? Why isn't McGregor Mayweather in Dublin and the stadium there? Well, this doesn't make sense.
Well, Floyd Mayweather is the biggest star in boxing, first of all, so that's happening where he lives. But exactly, Conor McGregor's a big star.
But apparently if British boxing, everyone wants to come here and this is the biggest market. But when they see that a fight like Wilder Joshua may get moved to Vegas and T-Mobile Arena and make about loads more money than it would at Wembley, then it starts to puzzle. Yeah, it would. Conceivably, it would. But well, as it stands, because Wilder's not the biggest name in America and Joshua never fought there, that would need some building to happen there. So as a fan, he probably wanted to happen at Wembley and have a great atmosphere and whatnot. But if it was built correctly and promoted correctly, then it'd sell out T-Mobile Arena, and in the Vegas casinos would pay loads of money for it. And
exactly,
they both would be loving to the bank. And all the British fans that complain that they have fight, that have the biggest fights that happen at 4 a.m. in the morning here, would be angry. But Eddie Hearn and Anthony Joshua and everyone involved would just go with their money.
Well, so, based off of what we saw from Canelo Golovkin Mayweather McGregor and Mayweather Pacquiao, we can do fights whenever we want here in America. You Brits will still buy them because the pay-per-view records are held by American fighters in the UK. So let's start there.
Exactly.
Second of all, the gate at Vegas will probably be possibly higher than the Wembley gate because we charge so much for tickets here.
It would be a lot higher, even close to double.
You know, and that's with selling out a 70,000 stadium. Like, you know, I don't know what the upper deck costs, but it can't be very much. I mean, who the hell wants to buy tickets at, like, you know,
where you need binoculars to watch the action.
And here we have, you know, Dallas Cowboy Stadium with a humongous screen, and you could fit like close to the same amount as you would in Wembley, except Dallas Cowboy Stadium is far more technologically superior if you're going to host a fight.
How about them Cowboys?
Well, they're losing right now. They're a good team. Let's just basically say that Jamie McDonald versus Laborio Solis got stopped early because of a bad headbutt. But McDonald was on his way to getting beat again. Except this time, I'm sure he probably wouldn't have gotten the decision. You agree?
Yeah, I have to agree with that. McDonald's struggling out the weight.
He's struggling as a boxer, in my opinion.
Yeah, we'll have to see about that. But yeah, we'll see how he does when he moves up.
Okay, let's move on to the news from this week. We've got some good news to talk about this week, I think, some juicy stuff. First of all, Errol Spence versus Lamont Peterson is finalized January 20th on Showtime. I think, now look, I know that Lamont Peterson is not Keith Thurman. I am not stupid. I know he's not. And I know that that's what people want to watch. But for the first defense of Spence's title, while Thurman is recovering from, and if you didn't see it, it was a pretty bad surgery, or not, the surgery wasn't bad, but the injury was bad. For the first defense, this is a good fight. Peterson poses not a problem, but he poses a challenge for Spence that is an interesting one because we haven't seen Spence have to deal with it. So while this is a fight that Spence is very likely going to win, we're going to actually learn something from this fight. We're going to see how Spence adapts to a fighter that has a style that we haven't seen before. And I don't know if you're playing marbles or something, or, you know.
I'm playing PlayStation, mate. Xbox.
Well, stop.
I'm not.
Stop pressing the joystick so hard or something. Like you act like you're in a commercial or something, and act, you know how in commercials when they play, it's like, come on, nobody like makes that much noise when they're playing. So anyway, Errol Spence is going to defend against Lamont Peterson. I am sure, as a PBC and Al Haymon hater, that you'll have something bad to say about this. So go on.
Peterson sucks and he's a drug cheat.
So is Anthony Joshua. I'm kidding. Relax.
No, I
meant Tyson Fury.
I actually don't mind the fight at all for the reason that you listed. And considering that the last IBF World's Weight Belt holder's first events was against JoJo Dan. This is a godsend.
This is proof. You're making my point. When I call you out as a hater of Matchroom, of British boxing, despite being British, I you seem to hate all the things that you are. That is the proof right there.
Wait, that's just facts, though. Come
on. What? Oh yeah, his first defense was JoJo Dan. I thought it was, but JoJo Dan was like the mandatory. I love when they hide behind being mandatory.
And then he had a voluntary defense against
Frankie Gavin,
and then fought Kevin Bizier.
Bizier just earned that shot, though.
Yeah, I guess so.
By being the number two Canadian welterweight in the world.
But yeah. What's interesting about the Spence-Peterson fight is Spence is actually a slow starter, and I noticed this from watching the Brook fight live at the stadium.
He is.
He's got actually, because I was there, saw Brook quit in front of his own fans. yeah, he's a slow starter. Peterson himself is a slow starter. Obviously, we saw in numerous examples, one that won't be named because it brings back bad memories, and then one against Matisse, where he started slow and then got paid the
ultimate price.
Paid the ultimate price. So it'll be interesting to see if Spence sticks him on early, or if he does that usual gradual build up a head of steam and then get his guy out of there in the middle of the late rounds.
The fight that you didn't want to mention was the Amir Khan fight. And if you don't know, he's SKB Babs, a.k.a. AJ, is a big Amir Khan fan. Or Amir Khan fan. And it's no secret why you don't like Anthony Joshua.
Yeah. If you haven't seen him, if you didn't know already.
Staying in the welterweight division. Oh, do you think Peterson has a chance?
Him to none, but I don't see many in that division troubling Spencer either way.
Do you think he has more of a chance than Brook?
No.
I think he does. Because at least we know that if Peterson gets hit in the face, it's not going to start swelling immediately, and he's not going to break an orbital bone.
Well, it's easy to say that in hindsight, isn't it? Come on.
No, because and you know this, because we talked privately before the Brook fight, and I told you, I am picking Spence because Brook's face will not hold up. It will not hold up.
But you had no inkling to believe that, unless you're like some trained doctor, to believe that Brook's second all was a bone will go. I picked Spence over Brook because I think he's the better boxer, but I thought it'd be a very close fight, which it turned out to be until
this. I come from the medical field, so that's why.
Okay, so la-dee-da.
Well, yeah, I like how you, I'm an American. I don't know why you're not giving me credit. Maybe if I was British, I can understand you not wanting to give me any credit, but I'm an American. You should be all over. Like, yep, you were right, buddy. Interesting. So staying in the welterweight division, let's talk about Jeff Horn. I told you we'd talk about him, and we talked enough about the British domestic scene, so let's do it again. He's going to fight. I actually don't even know how to say his last name. Is it Gary Cochran?
Yep, correct.
Okay, I can't spell it. I just spelled out like Cochran, like Johnny Cochran. Jeff Horn will fight him on December 13th, and it'll be on ESPN.
Are you waking up at God knows what time in the morning to watch it in America?
No, because it'll probably be on in the evening for us. But let's be real here. Is this much better than when Frankie Gavin fought Bradley Skeet?
It'll be a different type of boring. This one will be a very frustrating, messy fight, kind of boring in terms, as opposed to like people jabbing and not doing much type of boring that Gavin Skeet was.
Like doing boxing?
Yeah, that kind of tactical boring. This will be just messy boring.
I think a lot of, especially American listeners don't, and most of the British listeners don't know much about Gary Cochran. Can you tell us anything about him?
Former British light middleweight title contender.
Oh, I'm sold already. Domestic,
below domestic level, arguably lost his last fight.
Against who?
And another British domestic fight that no one will know. And, yeah, so he's moving down the weight. He's quite big and physical, so he'll try and impose that on Horn. But I just can't bring myself up to thinking that this is a welterweight fight. And the fact that Jeff Horn docked Bradley Skeet, which I think is atrocious.
They couldn't get Eggington in the ring? Like, if you're going to fight a British fighter, like, Eggington's decent. He's got a following, doesn't he? Of other people who look like they haven't slept in 3 days.
Yeah, I guess you can call it that.
Either way, Jeff Horn, what a disappointing first defense. Like, so
just get us to March and get us to Crawford, and let's be done with this era.
I mean, if you look at it, so they're both making their first defenses of their welterweight titles. Spence takes on Lamont Peterson. Horn's taking on Gary Cochran. Like, come on. How many levels apart is that?
Well, I guess it's in line with the expectations of both fighters, if you want to be sympathetic.
Okay, fine. We'll go with that.
It won't be reasonable. One guy's tipped as a future fighting a former world champion. Another guy's tipped as a one-hit wonder fighting a below domestic level British fighter.
Very good fight potentially happening, as Jorge Linares, his people met with Mikey Garcia this week, and they're hoping to make this fight. How optimistic are you, however, that they'll actually sign a fight between Linares and Garcia?
More optimistic than I was this time, like last month, because I think both have less options than they did before, with Terry Flanagan now moving up to 140.
Oh, that's a top guy at 140.
Yeah, top contender.
That's sarcasm, people.
So he vacated his belt. He's moving up. And Mikey Garcia only wants big unifications. I don't know what happened with... They were talking about the Robert Easter fight. That doesn't seem to be getting anywhere at this stage. But the next best guess is Linares, who said he wants to fight.
I think the potential is a lot higher now, because Golden Boy's willing, or at least they've stated, they're willing to do one fight deal.
No options. Yeah, exactly.
And Garcia would be an idiot to sign a lengthy deal with any promoter. I mean, the guy he's like the one fighter who's capable of fighting at multiple divisions and staying elite at every single stop that he makes. And he's the favorite, arguably, over everybody in the divisions he fights in. We were going to favor Mikey over Miguel Cotto.
Well, you were.
No, I said on the podcast, I don't know about this. This doesn't seem like a great idea, and I hope Mikey doesn't take it. I said that. But the public at large were going to favor Mikey over Cotto. Now, that's more speaking about Cotto than it is about Garcia.
Correct.
So anyway, we talked earlier a little bit about this. We're going to talk a little bit more now. So Shinsuke Yamanaka said he's not going to retire. He wants a rematch with Luis Nery to get his title back. But technically, he should have his title because Nery failed the drug test, technically should be vacant, and he should be fighting like the number one, number two, or in the case of like a Wilder, number 13 contender. he should be fighting that guy to get his title back. But the WBC, the Mexican company, has said that the Mexican fighter basically did have something in his system. They didn't test a B sample, and they don't know if the drug was used to enhance his performance. So therefore, he's okay.
For now. Until yeah. it happens again.
So I don't like this. I don't think Yamanaka's got anything left. I thought he was basically, if he didn't lose to Neary, he was going to lose his fight next fight after that. He's done. Yamanaka's never had like the strongest chin or anything. And at this point, like, I just don't see him being elite anymore.
How harsh is that? So basically, he now has to go back into another fight with a guy who just lost him inside four.
Yeah, and then won last night as well.
Yeah, won last night. Got dropped, though. I heard, yeah. But, you know, this guy's young, can clearly has ability, performance enhanced or otherwise. And he's on the come up, and then you have a faded ex-champion.
Yeah, so the interest in Bantamweight isn't that big. I mean, Yamanaka could fight McDonald.
Well, speak for you guys. In the UK, we're thriving at 118.
Because you've got champion. Jamie McDonald.
And Ryan Burnett, unified.
Oh, I forgot about pound for pound Ryan Burnett, number two behind Adonis Stevenson.
Pound for pound. Andy Lee, after the Zahiano fight, was saying this guy should be top 20 pound for pound. I was like, okay.
Can it, literally, like, seriously, do you think Andy Lee could list off 19 other guys? How many of them would be British? Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's move on to my favorite news, I think, of the week. The UFC is looking to promote boxing fights. And it's something that they're taking a look at for 2018. Now, Bob Arum, usually you just can't believe anything he says. But I think he had a really good point. And it was exactly, basically, as I was reading this, all these things popped into my head. You know, I know a lot about the business side of UFC. I follow enough publications that focus on like the media, the business side of sports across all the sports. You know, the NBA, NFL, hockey, etc. And I know about the UFC's problems. So anyway, while Babs types away on his typewriter, I'll read the quote for you. And this is what Bob Arum told Michael Woods of NY Fights. My thoughts are that UFC is desperate. Coming out strong. Their numbers are way off. They have no marquee star. Look at their pay-per-view numbers. They barely break 100,000 homes on their shows. They're having trouble getting renewal on their contract with Fox. They have to do something. One of the things they may try and fall back on and try and acquire a boxing presence. That I read that exactly, okay? I know, it doesn't make sense. About a year ago, I was approached by someone repping UFC. They wanted to buy Top Rank. Now, just imagine that world where a year ago, Bob Arum, 95 years old, Bob Arum, sold Top Rank to the UFC. Wow. That would have been something.
Dare. Can you imagine that?
No, I really can't. Like, I can't imagine that. So first of all, let's break this down. Their numbers are way down. Correct.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Their numbers are like just gone in the tank. They have no marquee star. The one marquee star that they had, he just got beat up by Floyd Mayweather. The other marquee star they had is on cocaine or performance enhancing drugs or maybe all of the above.
And that marquee star was never really a marquee star to begin with.
Don't disrespect the greatest UFC fighter of all time. Okay?
Right, you're just saying that because you play UFC 2 a couple times. Like,
I played it more than a couple of times.
Jones is a special athlete, but he never ascended to that level of pay-per-view stardom.
Okay, fine, but you can't deny that he's the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I think he is.
Fine. That's what I said. I didn't say he was Floyd Mayweather of
UFC. You said he was a marquee star.
Fine, I'll give that to you. Ronda Rousey, has she woken up yet? Has she regained consciousness? I don't know. She probably thinks she's still in a fight somewhere. Then you have then there's other like minor stars that they have that aren't really stars. You know, Demetrius Johnson.
Johnson's not a star at all. He's the 100,000 buy guy.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna. I just wanted to make fun of that, but thank you for doing it for me.
Obviously GSP's back.
So that's Canada, the thing. George St. Pierre is back, but George St. Pierre, from my research, is only like an 800,000-900,000 pay per view buy guy.
At best, and he needs viable dance partners, of which there may not be many, depending on what the business begins operating.
Let's see. And he's also really old, by the way.
Yeah, 35, 36.
So, and apparently the arena wasn't even sold out. There was tickets available the day before the fight, which is, you know, a bad sign because UFC typically does good attendance numbers. However, gate number is usually pretty low. They don't charge as much for their tickets. They're just like a UK promotion. TV ratings have been massively down. They tried to play hardball with Fox to get a huge contract, and Fox has played hardball back with them and said, we'll just stick with the World Series and baseball and stuff. So, yeah, they do have to do something. I mean, they were just bought last year by WMEIMG for a huge number. Do you remember how much it was? Was it like 2 or 4 million or something?
4.2 billion.
Right. And how have they reaped that back? By having one of their worst years in a lot of years, right?
And trying to make a bunch of super fights that have never materialized, and having some of their fighters either retire or get banned again for drugs. So,
I mean,
it's not looking good.
Oh yeah, no, Lesnar didn't come back this year, right?
Well, no, he got banned before they bought it. But obviously, when Jones came back and won the light heavyweight title, they were like pitching all these superhero fights, like Jones versus Lesnar and whatnot. And obviously, now that Jones has failed another test, went out the window.
Would that be kind of similar to claiming that people want to, or people actually would want to see Ward versus Joshua after Ward had beat Kovalev? It's kind of similar, right, weight-wise?
No, because the disparity between Jones and Lesnar isn't as big as it would be between Ward and Joshua.
What about Ward and Wilder?
Yeah, okay, that's a bad example.
Yeah.
But obviously Wilder's a lot much taller than Ward, but in terms of like weight, that's a bad differential to make.
Okay, so there we go. So I don't see them getting into boxing, because then they have to circumvent the Ollie Act, and if they would basically be the UFC having to adopt an entirely different business model than the one they have. I mean, in their model, they own everybody, they own everything, they own the likeness. You can't do anything. You have to show up for press events. It's just completely unlike what we have in boxing, where basically everyone is represented by something, and nobody's connected to anything, and the only thing you have is like promotional agreements. But basically everything else, you're free to do what you like. So I don't see it happening. I think if they took a look, they would see that it's not viable. And who could they sign that's actually on the market that they could possibly turn into a star? I mean, it's Conor McGregor, and that's it. And then, no. Okay, who's he going to beat? Yeah. Okay.
He's beating Paulie.
He's not beating Paulie.
Yes, he is.
Dude, he's not beating Paulie.
Yes, he is. He'll bring his balls this time.
Ooh, okay. Well, Lucas Matisse is going to fight for a world title for like a fifth time. He's like, Lucas Matisse, seriously, is like George Groves of Argentina. And I love Matisse, but dude, you can't fail so many times. Okay? He will fight Tirachai Kratingdeyanjim. And it's for the WBA title that Lamont Peterson vacated, which somehow is a shame. How is this a world title fight?
Because the WBA is stupid.
Exactly.
They said they set out a plan to somehow eliminate the secondary title belts, and then now they sanctioned this fight. I remember I listened to an interview with Gilberto. It must have been in the summer. And this is when Frampton was trying to come back to fight it back home. and they basically wanted Francis to move up to 130, his promotional team. They wanted him to move up to 130 and fight Brian Vasquez for the vacant WBA regular 130 title that Jason Sosa vacated.
In fact, they'll probably beat him.
And then Mendoza said no to that. But now, and because he was on this plan, and then now here we are, still having regular belts all over the place. So it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and you have cards like the Mares and Santa Cruz card that we had a couple weeks back, where Mares has the regular title and Santa Cruz has the same title, except it's the super title in the main event. Ridiculous.
How can you get so many wrong elements to boxing in one card? You have two versions of a world title from the same sanctioning body on one card. Two guys who should be rematching each other, or shouldn't even be rematching each other, because the first fight was pretty convincing victory for one guy, but they're having tune-ups to lead up to a mandated rematch of a pointless fight. So it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Do UFC really want to get involved with that? I don't know. I guess maybe they look at the HBO card on 12/9 and what you can put on, and then they're like, you know, I think we could succeed in this, because Orlando Salido is going to fight Mickey Roman. Is this anything other than just like a slugfest?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
But we could do a really nice slugfest in December.
I wonder if Matisse is going to be on the undercard there. Because I don't remember seeing a date attached to Matisse's next fight. Let's talk about the fights this week. And some fights you're qualified to talk about. Others, not so much, but there's some you are.
I'm qualified to talk about everything.
No, we'll stop.
Give me one fight I'm not qualified to talk about.
Danny Jacobs versus Luis Arias. Because you're clearly biased against one of the fighters.
How?
Because I thought he lost
the Golovkin, like any same individual.
No, you have a personal bias towards people. But let's talk about first Liam Smith versus Liam Williams. Now, the key question that American fans have that I hope you can answer is, how do you tell them apart? They fight in the same style.
No, they don't. First of all, Liam Smith is the Gallagher fighter, come forward. Liam Williams uses a jab ball and likes to box in the back foot. And
then how come Smith or Williams was beating up Smith in the last fight?
Because he's a better boxer.
And he was coming at him.
Yeah, and he used his jab more. And Smith couldn't really do much because he doesn't move his head.
Smith came on late, I'll give him that.
I think this is the thing that people have blown out into outcomes because out of proportion, the way that Smith came on and then Williams was starting to unravel before the fight was stopped. I didn't really see that so much myself. I thought Smith was doing better, but Williams still had his wits about him a little bit. But we have to see. It's an interesting fight. Probably one of the better domestic British fights that you'll see. And it's good to get to see it again.
Damn, I muted myself. The first fight between these... The first fight between these two guys was actually pretty dang good. This year too. I possibly would toss it in as a fight of the year contender.
No, I wouldn't go that far. It was just a good competitive world match kind of fight. We had quite a lot of these this year.
So but every year we need a domestic British fight that people think is good when it's really not. We had White Chisora last year, and I think it's going to be Smith Williams this year.
I guess so.
And this is for the... Or is this one again for the interim WBO title? I don't think so.
No, I think it's eliminator, and then the winner could probably get mandatory.
So basically, they're either going to get the winner of this fight is going to end up with the WBO title because Miguel Cotto is going to retire, and I can't see him losing to Saddam Ali. Although if he does, that would be hilarious.
That's pretty much nailed on.
And on the undercard to this fight is nothing interesting, unless you are interested in like BB, BFC title fights. Then we have another British fight, which you're going to tell me is, you know, featuring the best prospect in boxing and how this fight is going to be a good one. So go ahead and tell us about Josh Taylor versus Miguel Vasquez.
Shrewd matchmaking. Vasquez is not the kind of guy that you'd get see drafted into quite a British prospect, especially one as highly regarded as Josh Taylor. But Josh is quite big for the weight. He's basically my height as well. He's basically like 5'11", 6 foot, and make balls down to 140. And I think that size should play into a role. And if you can do
so, like Luke Campbell,
on, yeah, but better.
Don't even start.
You'll learn the hard way.
No, Taylor. So,
yeah,
will.
Yeah, we'll see about that. So, yeah. Interesting kind of style matchup, and it may get a bit ugly as Vasquez fights seem to do, but you know, credit to Josh for taking this kind of step, and credit for the McGregor's for putting him in this kind of situation, I guess you have to say. But we'll see how good of a match the decision it looks after the fight.
That's a very optimistic outlook of this fight, because the reality is this is a horrible fight. Like, Miguel Vasquez is nowhere close to the guy you saw beat Denis Shafikov for the IBF title, or when he defended it. Miguel Vasquez his last loss was to Argenis Mendez. Like, Luke Campbell knocked out Mendez, okay? Put that together.
He didn't knock out.
Or he dropped him, but he won a decision.
He got dropped by Mendez, actually.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
It's Easter who knocked out Mendez.
Right. Yeah.
And then in true Eddie Hearn fashion, they bring over Mendez thinking this will make Campbell look good, and then he doesn't look good.
Well, I mean, Campbell had already gotten beat by that point, but the point is made. I think Mendez not good.
So you have a lightweight who's been fighting all over the place, but is on the side and hasn't looked that good fighting a highly rated prospect.
But what you said before about Vasquez is what's going to be the takeaway for a lot of people. And I'm not saying anything about whether Josh Taylor is good or not. I'm not going there. You got to watch and figure that out for yourself. But I'm saying that so you can observe how overrated Josh Taylor's win over Vasquez will be. Notice how it's not how overrated Josh Taylor is, but how overrated the win will be. And just so you know, Vasquez will be coming down from welterweight.
He's even fought some fights at 150 and even close to 154 back in Mexico. So we'll have to see how he looks.
He'll look probably tall and skinny. And by the way, he's just as big as Josh Taylor. Guy who used to boil down to lightweight.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
He's 5'10". I thought he was 5'8".
No, Vasquez is huge. Not Roy huge, but huge.
Yeah. You can forgive me for forgetting, because that's how many fights of his I slept through.
Okay, well, again, we have an undercard, which is very skippable. We have one fight with like 2-minute rounds. Oh, that's because they're females. Interesting. Yeah. This will be on Channel 5 in the UK, by the way. The Liam Smith, Liam Williams fight, you can watch on Box Nation. And BT now Sport. We move on to the ESPN card. Did you know there's an ESPN card this week?
No, I did not. Oh, yes, I did, because of one guy on it.
Yeah, one guy who is Jose Ramirez, right? Or is it Mike Reed? Oh, no, the main event.
What's the Enrico, most... Enrico Culling, or whatever his name is. Yeah.
Kaling? Calling? Calling? Carter Beterbiev will be in the main event against Enrico Culling in a light heavyweight title between the number one and number two light heavyweights in the world. According to some people, Beterbiev is the reason why Andre Ward retired and why Kovalev basically lost both fights to Ward. They were trying to avoid him. Are you on board with that? Is Arthur Beterbiev that good?
He's not that good, but he's good enough to stake his playing for place amongst the top of the division in this transition period.
Okay. He's 32 years old.
You really wanted me to say that, yeah, he's the boogeyman, and then Andre Ward would retire to avoid him, like, which I'd happily say, but, you know, had to be honest to some level on this podcast.
We've been trying, actually, I've been trying to push this narrative that actually Ward retired because of Bivol. I want basically Bivol to leapfrog Beterbiev in the light heavyweight a hype pecking order. I don't think it's going to work. But anyway, he's going to fight Enrico Kaling. Now, who is Enrico Kaling? Is he any good? Well, he's only got one loss, and that loss was to a 13-2 domestic, I think, German fighter. Oh, no, he was Italian. So, yeah, this has the makings of what Top Rank's cards have been entirely about. You get a guy with a semi-impressive record, and then you pass it off as just like really good title fight. And then the A-side wins easily, and people are blown away by that. But the reality is, it was never a good fight to begin with. I don't see how this goes more than like 7 rounds, and I don't see how Beterbiev loses here.
He shouldn't. And it's just basically what's more interesting is what happens next and how the relationship between this guy and Top Rank builds from this point on. Now that you'll probably pick up a title belt. I'm interested to see who they'll match him with afterwards and what direction he goes in.
That is a good question.
I expect to be disappointed regardless.
Why, you don't have much faith in Top Rank's matchmaking?
You said it, not me.
I mean, I did say it, but it was a question for you. It seems like you're not interested in answering.
Well, as it relates to the light heavyweight division, I don't have much faith.
In Top Rank?
Because of all like the different factions that guys are promoted by in that division.
Does anybody know what happened to Igor Mikhantsev? Like, is he still fighting?
That name sounds familiar. What division was he in?
He was a light heavyweight. He was basically hyped as one of the Olympians that Top Rank had signed and was being trained by Freddie Roach and looked like a monster pretty early on in his career. And then he gets into a draw with like some basically domestic fighter and then majority decisions a guy in Russia. In Russia. And you're, you know, Russian. That usually doesn't happen, does it?
That sounds very similar to a British fighter here, actually.
Which one?
Who was a guy called Bradley Saunders, a light welterweight prospect.
Oh, yeah, Bradley Saunders. He was never good.
Yeah.
No, I remember seeing like Saunders in his first few fights, and I'm like, this guy sucks.
I actually thought he was quite good. When I would see him live at one of the Frank Warren shows, and he actually looked decent. And then he signed to Hearn. And then Hearn was going to build him as the face of boxing in the north of England. And then he loses to a journeyman and gets into trouble outside of the ring and wipes off the face of the earth. He's fighting in Eddie Hearn's next gen shows where there's basically prospects.
That's so true. What happened to him?
So he...
He was out of the ring for like 2 years.
Yeah, he had like some legal troubles and was in and out of court. And then Eddie just came back early, I think it was in June, on one of Eddie Hearn's northern shows. You know, that his next gen thing where you just get the prospects and mismatches and builds them up.
That's every Eddie Hearn show, but go on.
No, but this is one solely dedicated to that. Like, every now and again, he puts on a world title fight to make sure that he cares about this kind of stuff.
Oh my god, I remember this card. Because I thought, when you said when Bradley Saunders lost, I was like, oh yeah, he lost to Sean Dodd, but Sean Dodd actually won that card.
No, that's Thomas Stalker you're talking about. He was never any good.
No, but Gary... Or no. Sean Dodd did fight on that card, and he lost to Gary Buckland. No, he beat Gary Buckland, sorry. But Sean Dodd isn't good either. But anyway, moving on.
Yeah, not talking about British prospect and British level fighters.
I mean, I remember seeing Saunders like struggling in like his third fight, throwing haymakers and just nothing. And so I was like, this guy is not good. Like, and he was getting hyped. Like, this guy's like, you know, really good. Like, AJ's good.
Yeah, he was a very very highly regarded amateur. And then it wasn't meant to be. There's a lot of those in the recent classes that haven't been decent pros. But you know,
so
that's the way it is.
Let's move on. Adrian Granados. We talked about him last night. Now, whatever happened to Amir Imam? Has he been in the witness protection program?
I heard that he's in line to fight for one of the vacant belts. and that's what they're probably waiting for.
Well, I'll tell you where he is. I've spotted him. He's actually fighting on the Better BF undercard.
Oh, lovely. Is he still with Mr. Only in America?
I don't even know. To be honest with you, I have no clue. But let's talk about the other, like the co-main for this card is Jose Ramirez versus Mike Reed. Now, this is another fight on paper that Top Rank is passing off. Like Mike Reed has been with them for a long time, but you've never heard his name. He's 23-0, and you don't hear his name. 24 years old, 23 wins, undefeated, been with Top Rank for a long time, consistently featured on undercards, but you've never heard his name.
Is he another Irish Shawnee then?
Here's the thing with this fight, okay? I actually think Reed, the one thing he can do is box. Like, I think he's a better boxer than Jesse Hart. And we saw what Jesse Hart was able to do with Gilberto. He almost didn't almost beat him, but he almost made it a really competitive fight.
Yeah, he made a good account of himself.
Like, yeah, like Hart's like a guy like, all right, I'll watch you again. And I think Reed is a little better than him. And I think Ramirez is significantly worse than than Gilberto. Yeah. Ramirez has had a chance to shine on HBO and just did not deliver.
Who was this against again?
Jose Ramirez. He was an Olympian.
Who did he? Yeah, I know who he is. He was highly regarded when he turned over as well. Him and Valdez were like meant to be the two guys.
Yeah. And him, Valdez, and Verdejo was like the three-headed monster that Top Rank and HBO were pushing out. And he had a chance to fight on the Pacquiao-Bradley undercard, I think. I think he was on I think he actually got televised. Yeah, I think so. I think he was the opener, and he just didn't do anything. 10-round decision, and he lost a few rounds. So
sounds familiar.
Yeah, so I actually think like this is a competitive fight and one that potentially Jose Ramirez could lose. And
so this goes against your theory of Top Rank being the monsters who only put mismatches on.
Well, I mean, it's that's my theory, true, and I think yeah, this does go against it.
But it's an in-house fight, and any promoter does that, so
right,
can't get in too, I suppose.
No, and also because they benefit anyway. I mean, they're both young guys. I think Ramirez is 25, and then Reed is 24. So,
lucky. And doesn't Ramirez sell a lot of tickets close to his hometown anyway?
Yeah, it is in his hometown.
Yeah, that's what that makes sense now. I heard he's a decent ticket seller.
Yeah, and he's might possibly lose in front of his hometown crowd. and that's the fights this weekend.
Is it? What about? We're just not gonna allow me to discuss the big US debut of Conor Ben.
Oh shoot! I forgot about the Matchroom card because I went out of order because I wanted to talk about the Matchroom card last. So yeah. So we have the Matchroom card, the very first Matchroom card in America. Now I've basically highlighted what to expect from the British cards, but why don't you just kind of like, as a British person, what is your opinion on the typical Matchroom formula that that we see Eddie Hearn put out week after week in the UK? Well, not week after week, but on a monthly basis, essentially.
Well, before I start, let me just preface this that I don't hate Eddie Hearn.
Well, that's usually what you say when it's like, I don't mean to offend you, and then you offend me.
Yeah, but I'm going to offend people here. No, I'm not, because most of what I'm saying is pretty honest.
You're people, do what you like.
Yeah, exactly. Screw you. So Eddie Hearn has like his business model has developed into what is now ready. So he'll have what US fans are most exposed to are like the four or five big pay-per-view shows that he'll put on, which are headlined by his elite talent, AJ, Kell Brook, Tony Bellew.
Wow, you're just throwing elite around pretty loosely.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that, but give Bellew his due. And then what essentially it is you have essentially average fight cards, no better or worse than what is in America already, sometimes even worse, but because Eddie Hearn has the event feel locked into, and his shows are basically the equivalent of going on a night out to bars or whatnot. Like, if you're going to, like, I say the equivalent is like you're going to a sports bar in America, and they're playing music as well and all sorts. So on top of that, and then you have people hitting each other, or you have like an Olympian who's in a mismatch and gets a spectacular KO, then altogether you create the Eddie Hearn experience where it's like, yeah, great show, great atmosphere, but the fights weren't the same. And then, so in short, that's pretty much what to expect from Eddie Hearn as it relates to the UK market. But I'm not sure how he'll approach the US market. Does he want to try and create the same feeling? Because Americans are way different in the aspect that they have more options. And if they were looking to go on a night out, they just go on a night out. And you guys don't really have much atmosphere at your shows because people aren't like that.
No, because when people go to a fight, they want to see a fight. And if they wanted to go out drinking and talking to their friends, they'd go do that somewhere else, you know? I mean, people here don't go to their seats until the fight they want to see is on, like, actually going to happen. You know, the Mayweather-McGregor fight. Nobody was at their seat.
That's the same in the UK, too. You know, Joshua Klitschko, it wasn't... until the main event, like 10,000, 80,000 people were there for the card. Most people were in the bars or, gone to local pubs close to Wembley before the fights, even before the main event kicked off, and then they were in their seats. So it's the same in that aspect. But to keep people who are in full there, there is that event feeling where you have music and then Olympians knocking out bums and all that kind of stuff. And then the occasional 50-50 trade fight, as we like to call them, which is her just appeasing like his hardcore haters who rag on his matchmaking, and they say, "Oh yeah, this is a decent 50-50 fight." Yeah, me.
Okay, but we try. American promoters have tried that by having like music performances, and everyone just hates him.
I feel like, in a sense, that Eddie Hearn, nothing he's doing is like out of the ordinary from what I've seen in America. Like, I'm going back and watch fights from all like people like Prince Nassim and how he had his particular interests and all that stuff, and open workouts where they have music and stuff, and then when they play music in between rounds, Hearn's incorporated most of this stuff, which I've seen in America time and time again, but it's just been more received by his audience because it's more millennial, modern, and they like that kind of stuff. They like it to be trendy. But so I'm not really sure how he's going to be groundbreaking in that aspect. He's just going to be like another wheel in the operation
of
the American boxing market. So it's an interesting one.
I think it's pretty interesting too. And the good thing is we're going to have somebody there, so we'll know firsthand what it's like. So now let's talk about the fights. I'll let you talk about Danny Jacobs versus Luis Arias first, because I'm sure you have some wild stuff to say about this.
I would not be surprised if there's an upset here. It'd just be typical of
matchup.
Typical of Hearn going to the US with a guy who's selling his story, and the guy gets knocked out by a young prospect who's no one's pipping to win. But Jacobs seems to be in a maturing into as a fighter. Really saw in cover of age against Golovkin, regardless of whether he fought you won or not, which he didn't, but that's a story for another day. And Arias is a young up-and-coming prospect who's a bit inexperienced, and I don't know how he'll deal with the physicality of Jacobs, because Jacobs is still a big guy.
He's a really big guy.
Yeah, and he hits hard, so it'll be interesting in that aspect. It's more intriguing than most Eddie Hearn main events here are. So I'll give him that. But I expect Jacobs to probably come through. Again, with most of these general fights, it's just a case of what happens next and what path they take. Eddie Hearn signed Jacobs because he has a story and because he thinks he should be a bigger star than he already is, which to some extent you could argue because he is an inspiration and whatnot. But if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. And boxing is not meant.
But
boxing just not mainstream sport.
you have to have the top level wins, and Jacobs doesn't have that, first of all. And second of all, his competition is Golovkin and Canelo, two of the bigger stars in the sport. Canelo, obviously, the biggest star in boxing at the moment of active fighters. And then Golovkin is up there. He's up there.
Yeah, he's got some sort of clout. So, yeah, so he needs a top level wins. And he also just needs to be active more, which is what Hearn can help him with his new HBO partnership.
Well,
so,
sure, if he wants to do mismatches every 2 months, then yeah, he can follow that typical matchroom formula.
Yeah, but if you get a mismatch and you get Danny J, and then you get Max Kellerman saying, oh, maybe he did beat Golovkin, and oh, maybe this guy reminds me of, I don't know, the 1990s Thomas Hearns and all that stuff. So you get that sales pitch going. 90s
Thomas Hearn wasn't good. I hope he doesn't say that.
Oh, the one that was at Super Middleweight or whatnot, or say he's Iron the Blade Barkley or something like that. No.
Wow, you sound just like Max.
Yeah.
Just and then also throw in one Whitaker reference.
Yep. Sweet people, I know Whitaker. All
right, let's move on to the co-main. Jarrell Miller versus Marius Wok. Are you a fan of Jarrell Miller?
I'm a big fan of Jarrell Miller. He's exactly what the division needs, especially with Tyson Fury not around.
This guy who runs his mouth but isn't that good?
Yeah. I actually don't think he's that bad, to be honest. I know you don't rate him, but as it relates to the rest of the division, he's okay. He needs to stop weighing in at 300 pounds to start with. He needs to get himself in actually decent shape.
Do you see him beating Dillian White?
Yeah, he'd beat White easily. He'd beat him quite convincingly, just stylistically.
Okay, well, as long as you say that. I don't think Jarrell Miller's that good because, one, he's not in a decent shape. Two, I don't think he's got much power. I know he's paraded as a puncher, but that power will not be there if you were to get into the ring with AJ, with Wilder, Luis Ortiz. None of those guys would really be bothered by Jarrell Miller's power. He's got stamina issues. He puts his punches together nicely, but I think defensively he's very flawed. I just don't think Miller's that great. I think he's basically he's going to be good enough to beat everybody but the best guys.
Yeah, I can get along with that.
So, by me saying he's not that good, I'm just saying not that good compared to the hype that he's getting.
He's getting hype. He talks a lot, but he's been on a couple of Showbox cards. That's part of the
hype. You talk, you get hype.
Yeah, but he's only hyping himself.
Yeah, that's how it works.
He's being hype.
Like, if a wrestler comes out and cuts a promo about themselves.
When you talk about hype, you're talking about, Miller beats AJ now. Wilder's ducking him. All that stuff, so... Yeah, you have a different perception of height than I do. But, yeah, I guess you're right.
And then the fight before that will be Cletus Seldon versus Roberto Ortiz.
This is lovely. So, Seldon, who failed a drugs test in, what was it? He got banned in June. And after Eddie Hearn...
We're talking about the Hebrew Hammer, right?
Yeah. So, and then after Eddie Hearn went on about how Luis Ortiz should be banned from the sport for failing his second drugs test. Now he works with Star Boxing to have a guy on his show, on his first American show, who's had failed drug tests as well. So
I don't see a problem with that.
You think?
Eddie Hearn doing that double talk. Or either of us shocked.
Promotional double talk. Yeah, not really. And it's also weird that HBO would have a kind of fight like this on.
I don't know why they're airing it.
I don't know. It just doesn't make sense. You might as well just have Conor Bett on. If you want a full matchroom experience, you have to go full matchroom.
I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up, but you're right. If you really wanted to...
You need to go full matchroom. You need to have the music. You need to have the ring card girls. You need to have Conor Benn.
Sweet Caroline.
Co-feature. Yeah, Sweet Caroline. You need to have Conor Benn co-feature knocking out an undefeated guy from BoxRec.
An undefeated guy that they found on page 45 of BoxRec with like two fights.
Yeah, it's not a matchroom show without that.
Oh,
Conor Benn is the future.
What did you think of Harlem Eubank getting dropped yesterday?
Oh, dear.
Did you laugh?
Poor.
I did.
poor guy.
I mean, if we're talking about the family of, or the spawn of famous boxers, Harlem Eubank, the cousin of Chris, got dropped yesterday. And they didn't call it, by the way. They didn't call it. Like, the referee just pushed the other guy and got him up and said, that's a slip.
That's a slip. And then at the end, he wins the split decision. And two of the guys make sure he wins every round, even though he won like one of the four rounds.
It's ridiculous. But anyway,
it was a bit strong, harsh matchmaking for his third fight. That guy fought the guy fought Luke Campbell, and when Campbell was 11, was 10-0, I think. So
what? He had nine losses,
and it shows that Eddie Hearn just doesn't like the Eubanks. So they've had their differences in the past, and Eddie Hearn, and this is a true story. Eddie Hearn's head of boxing, Frank Smith, is dating Eubanks' sister.
For real?
For real.
Eubank has it first. Smash, of all, no, Chris Eubank Jr. Junior's sister?
Yes.
I didn't even know he had a sister.
No, he has a sister. And she's going out with Eddie Hearn, the boxing.
Her name is Emily Eubank.
Yes. That's the name. I forgot her name for a second. Yeah. If you go on her Instagram, you'll see pictures of her and some greased up white dudes. That's Frank Smith, Eddie Hearn's head of boxing.
Did you say greased up white dude?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, she kind of looks like Chris, but just a female version.
She ain't got nothing on the girl sister anyway, so there's no point discussing.
Don't even go there. Don't even go there. Like, eight guys listening to this right now just drop down to one knee.
Including Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, man. All right. Well, thanks for coming on. Thanks for listening. If you're listening still, you know what to do. Leave a rating. If you haven't already, leave a review. You can catch us on all the popular podcasting services, except for Spotify, who just like they don't respond to emails, I guess. I don't know how to get on to Spotify, but we're trying. And that's it, actually. You just submitted a piece today. What's your piece about?
It's basically talking about how Eddie Hearn and Anthony Joshua ducking Deontay Wilder. So that should be out early this week.
Yep.
And criticize accordingly, as you guys seem to do.
But you... Jesus Christ. Kidding. Like, why did I ask that? I'm just going to end the podcast here because we don't want to hear about how Josh was ducking anybody.
Don't want to hear the truth.
Oh, God. All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Peace.
They say it's lonely at the top in whatever you do. You always gotta watch motherfuckers around you. Nobody's invincible, no plan is foolproof. We all must meet our moment of truth. The same shiesty cats that you hang with and do your thing with could set you up and wet you up. Nigga, peep the language, it's universal. You play with fire, it may hurt you or burn you. Lessons are blessings you should learn through, let's face facts. Although MCs lace tracks, it doesn't mean behind the scenes there ain't no dirt to trace.